All right, everybody, welcome to the Progressive Care May 15th, 2018 Investor Call. I'm your host, Stuart Smith, and I will be joined today by Sheetal Mars, Progressive Care Incorporated CEO. Before we get started, please allow me to read the following. These are the cautionary statements regarding forward-looking statements. Statements contained in this conference call that are not based upon current or historical fact are forward-looking in nature and constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of Section 27A of the Securities Act of 1933 and Section 21E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. Such forward-looking statements reflect the company's expectations about its future operating results, performance, and opportunities that involve substantial risk and uncertainties. These statements include, but are not limited to, statements regarding the intended terms of the offering, closing of the offering, and use of any proceeds from that offering. When used herein, the words anticipate, believe, estimate, upcoming, plan, target, intend, and expect, and similar expressions as they relate to Progressive Care Incorporated, its subsidiaries, or its management are intended to identify such forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are based on the information currently available to the company and are subject to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors that could cause the company's actual results, performance, prospect, and opportunities to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these forward-looking statements. We do have many questions that will be answered today in the Q&A section and also in the overview provided by Sheetal Mars, Progressive Care Incorporated CEO. And I want you to keep sending those questions and we'll try to answer as many of them as we can in this call. And even after, we can email you responses or take those questions on in the next smallcapvoice.com interview. Now, with that being said, I'd like to introduce to you once again, Sheetal Mars, Progressive Care Incorporated CEO. Sheetal, the floor is yours.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. I'm going to go over the financial statements as fully and thoroughly as I possibly can before we get to the questions. I know that there's a lot going on in our financial statements, so I want to make sure that I address some of the questions that we've received so far about them, as well as give a good overview of what they say and what they mean. So if everybody can look at the balance sheets, I'm going to start with that and go down the line. On the balance sheets, compared to 2017, our cash position is much improved. Some of that is operating cash flow from FarmCo, and some of that is the drawdown from Chicago Venture Partners. As you know, we drew down those funds to execute on the acquisition of Touchpoint, but as of March 31st, 2018, we had $1.2 million of cash on hand. We had $1.1 million in accounts receivable, and inventory has relatively remained flat. We turn over our inventory about once every week to a week and a half. We keep our inventory as tight as possible while also making sure that we have the availability of drugs for all of our patients. So we don't want to limit our inventory, but we also want to make sure it turns over very quickly. And I think we're turning it over pretty quickly at once every 1.5 to 2 weeks. Prepaid expenses has changed a lot from December 31st, 2017, if you're comparing it even to some of the statements last year. What the difference is the unamortized portion of the stock-based compensation due to the bonuses. So as you all know, we disclose we have a 12-month vesting period on any bonuses we issued in January of this year, and those are being amortized every quarter up until the expiration of that vesting period, which expires January 2019. So what you see here in prepaid is a portion of prepaid insurance for any of the insurance policies we carry, but also about three-fourths of the stock-based compensation, the value of that on our books. We have accounts payable is relatively flat. As much as you guys can look into the balance sheet, we have all of our assets are enough to meet our current liabilities. We are not in need of cash to pay any of our debts. If you see notes payable, that includes Chicago Venture Partners. That also includes the amounts owed to Script Pro for the Script Pro automated dispensing machine that we installed at the end of 2016, beginning of 2017. And then the biggest change in our liabilities is the derivative liability stemming from the drawdown from Chicago Venture Partners, which is about $668,000. That amount will change as the price of the stock fluctuates. This is valued at what the shares were at March 31st, 2018. This will change as it's being paid off. Currently, we have about $200,000 remaining to be paid on that note, so that derivative liability will change substantially in June when we report our June numbers. Going into the P&L, as you know, and we reported in our press release, this was the highest quarter, highest revenue grossing quarter that we've ever had at $5.1 million. That's about close to 8% higher than it was in the same quarter, 2017. This is partially compressed by decreasing reimbursements for our medications. Compounding has seen the most of that compression, where we used to maintain very high margins. Those margins have come down significantly. For the same amount of scripts that we dispensed in 2017, if we're looking apples to apples, if we're looking at 2017, the same 1,000 scripts in 2017 to compared to the same 1,000 scripts in 2018, it's about 25% decrease in reimbursements as a whole. When we look at cost of goods, those cost of goods have also increased. DIR fees are included in cost of goods, as well as packaging and everything else, and not just the drug costs, but those have increased as a percent of revenue over this quarter. That is industry-wide, and that is consistent year to year. Every year we witness decreasing reimbursements, increasing costs. There are things we can do to mitigate that. One of the things that we try to do is diversify our revenue stream between drugs, where we're not relying on one single drug class or one single treatment method in order to realize most of our revenue. We try to do as much of everything as we possibly can. That's why we are a full-service pharmacy. So that will help us on the revenue side, continue to maintain growth. Volume helps a lot. Even if we have decreasing margins, the more volume we do, and while we decrease or maintain general administrative expenses associated with that growth, we'll be able to realize some scale on that end and have some profitability as we increase our volume. You'll see share-based compensation. That is the amortized portion of the share-based compensation that was issued in January, about $142,000. You will see that in every quarter throughout the rest of the year as we bring that out of prepaid expenses and expense them out. SG&A has actually gone down. Part of that is decreased compensation as it relates to compounding sales and the associated cost of maintaining employees with filling and maintaining the business as a whole. So as we decrease the profitability and decrease the margins, we have been monitoring our SG&A expenses to make sure that we're as lean as possible and we're spending as little as possible. And I hope everybody can hear me. I know it's a little difficult. I'll try to be as clear as I can. If after the call you have questions on something I've said, please submit them to Stuart, and I'll be happy to clarify. We have a net loss, mostly attributable to the share-based compensation and the derivative liability associated with Chicago Venture Partners. Otherwise, we are essentially break-even at about $7,000 loss on the quarter. We are doing our best to keep those costs as lean as possible. Some of these could not be avoided, especially Chicago Venture Partners, who were instrumental in allowing us to execute on the Touchpoint acquisition. So we do have some of these costs. They won't be recurring throughout the end of the year. We do not plan on any more stock-based compensation through the end of the year. Neither are we planning on taking down any more draws on Chicago Ventures throughout the year. I think the funding that we've gotten so far is enough to meet our needs for Touchpoint and Farmco throughout the end of the year, and we'll be reevaluating our financing needs as we go through the year and look at other acquisition targets. Once Chicago Venture Partners, the loan has been completely paid off, we'll realize some gain back on that derivative liability. As you know, that adjusts with the pricing of the stock, so some of that derivative liability will be adjusted, and we'll get some of that loss back. Within that quarter, we know that we issued about 50 million shares. That includes $40 million shares to officers, directors, employees, and about 10 million shares to Chicago Venture Partners so far in repayment of that second tranche. We have about $200,000 remaining to go, and we'll be paid, most likely have that paid off before the end of June. Going into our cash flow, and this is the really big bright spot for us as a company on the financial side, is we have increased cash flow from operations. Farmco is doing exceptionally well in growing its revenue, growing its prescription counts, decreasing its costs, paying down its liabilities, having good and favorable terms with its vendors, that we are able to realize some gains in cash flow from the operations itself. What that means is that we are not in a position, and don't anticipate being in a position, where we would need any kind of financing or funding to pay our bills, to pay our employees, or keep the lights on, or pay the rent here. So we know that as we move forward into the rest of the year, the financial stability of the company by itself is sound, and we are able to capitalize on our ability to gain that cash flow and grow the company organically and increase our customer base, increase our delivery radius, and expand our West Palm Beach location and expand in Miami and Dade County with the cash flow we have on hand. So at the end of March, I'll reiterate, we had $1.2 million in cash on hand. I'm going to go a little bit now into the MD&A so we can provide some context and commentary on how these numbers came about. I'm going to scroll down a little bit here to see my notes. We're looking at some of the highlights for the quarter. We completed our 2017 audited financials. We had $1.9 million in revenue for March 2018. While we are increasing our revenue, some of that has to do with growth with our clinics, growth with our physicians' offices, the more referrals we get. But the fact that we are a five-star pharmacy delivering consistent service and quality of service and superior service to our patients, our doctors, our insurance carriers, that is where most of that word of mouth, most of that marketing is going, and why we're being able to benefit so greatly from our rating. Every year when measures come out, and I hope to explain more of this in future calls, as more doctors are transitioned to risk-based contracts with Medicare and not fee-for-service, which means they share some of the cost risk that the insurance company bears with their patients, they now increasingly turn to pharmacies who can manage that risk. 40 to 60% of those measures, 40 to 60% of their performance is based on adherence and compliance, which is what Farmco and Progressive Care specializes in. And every year around March and April and August and September, we get a great deal of calls from physicians and providers across South Florida who get their measures from their scores and their measures from CMS and realize that they need to do a better job of managing their risk and managing the health and well-being and health outcomes of their patients. And so they turn to a pharmacy like us who can become that linkage point for them and their patients in the interim periods when they don't see their patients. So we can manage those medications, we can manage that risk, and we can help keep patients healthy and out of the hospital and out of the urgent cares and out of the rehab centers. And that's what we do best, and that's why we're growing our revenue, and that's why this quarter was the best quarter we've ever had at $5.1 million. We filled over 66,000 prescriptions. That's a 24% increase over the same period in 2017. Part of that growth that we're seeing, why it's 24% increase. Usually in the first quarter of the year, we have what's known as deductible season. So doctors traditionally will abstain from modifying a patient's medication regimen or prescribing something costly because patients have not met their deductibles and won't be able to afford any changes in their medication makeup or afford any expensive treatment. However, this is the first year when we're seeing increases in growth like this at 24% in the first quarter of the year. That lets us know that the work we are doing with doctor's offices and with physicians and with clinics and with hospitals and long-term care facilities is working. We know that they're not holding off taking care of their patients. They're not holding off sending new scripts to the pharmacy because they know that they need to start from January, not April, in taking care of those medications and sending them to a pharmacy that can really deliver for their patients. So we're seeing a big jump in the first quarter of 2018. An increased number of prescriptions for our 340B contracts. A lot of that has to do, again, with our ability to manage the adherence and compliance. In 2017, 2016, we were operating at less than half of what we're doing now. We've raised millions of dollars for HIV, for Empower U, and several thousand dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars for Community AIDS Network. In the short time that we've been working with Community AIDS Network since the end of last year. So we hope that will continue to increase. We hope to get more of those contracts so we can deliver more benefits to that community, that specialized community, that not-for-profit community. And also we're realizing better margins on those specialty drugs by doing these programs. So we're mitigating some of the costs associated with being a specialty pharmacy by working with these 340B institutions, these charitable institutions, and helping them raise money while also helping our bottom line as well. As you know, we've worked to acquire Touchpoint in West Palm Beach. That acquisition will close in June 2018, so we're just about a month, no more than a month and a half away from consummating that relationship, at which point, once the closure has happened, we will then be reporting Touchpoint's financials on our consolidated financial statements. The reason we haven't, as of this point, even though we are managing the company as of April 1st, is that acquisition has not closed and cannot close until all of the regulatory hurdles are surpassed. We have some notification requirements and notification periods that must elapse, and some approvals that we still need to retain, including from the Board of Pharmacy, Medicaid, and the DEA. We are looking at doing more technological advancements. Some of that we accomplished in the first quarter, which is launching our online prescription management solution, which allows any patient to go online and request refills, submit new prescriptions, request transfers of prescriptions. We can also accept cryptocurrencies as a payment source. That allows people to go into, use their Bitcoins and use any kind of Bitcoin wallet to access their pharmacy services, pay us, and through our payment processor, BitPay, that is converted into U.S. dollars on a daily basis. We are licensed in about 12 states other than the state of Florida, and we are adding more states. We are evaluating which states to go into next, and some of those application processes take a little bit longer than others. I know Minnesota is one of those states that we're looking into and going into the Midwest in Indiana and Wisconsin. So we are looking at those states. We filed some applications. Those applications are pending, and we're waiting to hear back from those regulatory agencies whether they've been approved or not. Looking into the future, and I'm going to address it just briefly because I want to talk about it again after the question and answer session. We are going to execute on the acquisition of Touchpoint in June. We are looking at continuing the uplist process, which means becoming fully reporting with the SEC and then ultimately uplisting to NASDAQ. That is in the short-term horizon. I put time periods of about 12 to 18 months on the longest scale, but most likely we will be done far sooner than that. And that will provide us with a great pathway to further expand the company. I know that everyone is waiting very patiently for that to occur, and that is a constant question that we get every call is when there is a date for when we will be fully reporting with the SEC. I do not have a date, but the application process and the registration process is going to begin shortly, and we expect to be done with that process within the next 12 months. So I know I've kind of glossed over a lot of the financials. I know that there are many more questions, so I'm going to head now to the question part of it, and I'll address as many questions as I possibly can.
All right. Thank you, Sheetal, for that. So let's start with the first question. And you touched on it a little bit in your overview. Can you explain a little bit more about DIR fees, how they are recorded, and the expected timing of the return of DIR fees?
So a DIR fee is a direct or indirect remuneration fee. What that means is a clawback of reimbursement by a pharmacy benefit manager, PBM. These pharmacy benefit managers you're familiar with would be Humana, CVS Caremark, Express Scripts, and others, and they charge this fee retroactively. So we could receive DIR takebacks any time during the year for any period in the prior year for any claim we've built. How are we recording them? We've been anticipating and monitoring how DIR fees have been taken over the last year, and we've finally been able to get an accurate accrual. So we are charging off every DIR fee now is included in our cost of goods sold. Those are monies already charged to us by the insurance company. And any amounts that have not been charged but we anticipate being charged is being accrued for in the liability section. So what we see now is we have several hundred thousand dollars being taken in the first quarter, some of that Humana and CVS and Aetna and Express Scripts and the like. We will not know, and there is no guarantee, that those funds will be returned. We have to wait and see based on our performance. And I'll give you an example of Humana, which publicly discloses its DIR fee process and its quality assurance program. With them, they evaluate us twice a year, and we are compared to other Humana pharmacies. So even if we meet all of the measures as prescribed by the goal sheets that they distribute, if other pharmacies perform even better than that, we may not see all or any funds returned to us. We need to stay in the top 70th percentile in order to receive all of our funds back. We get partial returns if we're better than half of all Humana pharmacies. Now, historically, last year, we received essentially all of our DIR fees back, approximately $300,000. We expect to perform equally, if not better, this year. However, because we can't anticipate how other pharmacies will perform or how those measures will be viewed by Humana, we do not accrue at this time a anticipated return of DIR fees. However, we do expect, at least on Humana, and to receive the vast majority of it, and for some of the other payers that don't, some of them don't return any DIR fees at all, some of them return partially, but for every company or PBM that has a program where we can receive money back of our DIR fees, we anticipate to receive funds back. We just don't estimate or accrue them until we receive a measurement score from the relevant PBM.
Okay, when does the company expect to complete the acquisition of Touchpoint Rx?
So we expect, we signed the contract at the end of March, and we began managing them April 1st. We expect that all to be completed in June 2018. Right now, we have a date of June 20th. However, we are waiting out the notification periods with Medicaid, and we are waiting for DEA approval. We believe that both of those will be forthcoming, especially Medicaid, which is just a notification period, and we don't expect any difficulties with the DEA and the change of licensure at that level. So we're expecting June 20th is the closing date, and at that point, then we can start recording the revenues from that company on our financial statements.
Okay, the next question is, what are the benefits of the Parata Pass dispensing machine, and how does the company intend to develop its use?
So the Parata Pass, for those of you that are listening that don't know, it is a pouching system. So in each little packet, at any given time, let's say you're taking medication three times a day, at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, these pouches would contain every medication you need to take at that point. So you can rip off one pouch, all your pills are there, take them all at one time, and it's very convenient, especially if you travel or lead an active lifestyle. It also is great for adherence, so you know that you're not forgetting any pills. And this is especially important for anybody that's taking multiple medications. As many patients are who are diabetic or elderly, they may be on half a dozen to a dozen different meds, so it's important that they have all of them in one place. In one place. So our touch point location has the Parata Pass. We intend to develop that by marketing this not just for long-term care institutions, which is what it's historically been used for in the industry, these pouches being used for facilities, but market them to the retail patient on a local level. So take a patient who walks in, they have a grandmother who leads an active lifestyle, wants to spend the day with their grandchildren, they will be able to take their day's medication in four easy pouches, put it in their bag or purse, and move on, and have peace of mind throughout the day that they're not going to forget anything. And they don't have to have a big box or bag of all different vials of medications to take. The other thing that it does is it prevents a patient from taking medications that they don't need, like medications that are discontinued, medications that are expired, medications that have adverse health effects because they conflict with the medication regimen that they're currently on. So it isolates only the medications that they need. We intend to bring a form of this dispensing machine into the Miami Beach location. We have talked to a number of our large-scale clinics and our doctor's offices who are eager to begin utilizing this type of packaging for their patients on the retail side. And we want to use this for patients where they have a stable medication regimen. If the medication changes month to month, this is not the right packaging solution for them. However, if you're taking medication for the long term and your medication is relatively stable and you're not changing it, this type of packaging will be very beneficial. And we think that by marketing this, especially in Miami-Dade, which it's not available to the retail patient except for online, that it's going to be a great deal of increase in our customer loyalty and our referrals to us because we'll be able to do that much better with our adherence. So that's how we intend to grow this dispensing machine, why it's so important for us.
All right, next question. The company engaged CMW Media. Can you talk about what the goals are for this engagement?
So we recently engaged CMW Media to do a couple of things. One is the IR piece, and we want to standardize our messaging. We want to increase our distribution. We want to increase the visibility of our company and our story. So we believe that CMW will help us a great deal on that and getting our story out to as many eyes and ears as we possibly can. Right now, being on OTCQB has provided us with a great platform. We need to take advantage of it. We haven't been there very long. We've only been there for about 5 months, and we've already seen gains from being on that platform. And so we think CMW, by using their distribution channels, their media connections, their storytelling abilities, and the ability of them to look at our digital presence and our messaging, to link all that up and synchronize it and make it more effective for everybody, for our investors, our shareholders, and even for us as management, who can, and we can get kind of frustrated that we can tell a story and it just doesn't seem to get out the way we want to. So we think CMW is going to do a great job for that. They're also going to help us on the marketing and PR side for Farmco and our imaging and our commercials, our branding, our website, our digital presence on that as well. They're working with Mass Ventures, or they will be working with Mass Ventures to work on our Facebook and our Twitter and our blogging and all of that, so that we can make sure we reach as many patients and as many customers as effectively as possible, so we can explain our services and be clear and focused on what we intend to deliver. So that's what CMW is going to do. We will see, the goals for that is to see improvement in our visibility, to see our story being told more nationally, to see our story being told in all of the relevant trade journals, all the healthcare platforms, and see the public image of our company be expanded to more households and more eyes and more broker dealers and the like. So we should be able to see a change and notice whether it's working or not in the next 90 to 120 days.
Excellent. Well, let's go into the next question. Can you tell us a little bit more about what action the company took to combat naked short sellers, and what were the responses that you received?
So for everybody that's listening that doesn't know what naked short selling is, it means selling stock short without having the ability to deliver. And what that does is it creates the illusion of more volume. It creates the illusion of more shares in the float than there actually is. Now, naked short selling by itself is not illegal. If the person finds a way to deliver on their shares, there's nothing we can do about it that's perfectly legal. Now, there are some rules in place. The SEC has Rule 204, and there's Regulation SHO, which attempts to combat abusive short selling. And what that does is it's trying to create, if anybody tries to create more than 1.5% more shares outstanding or is shorting more than that naked, that creates 1.5% of the company's shares outstanding as being naked, then they would get involved. There's other benchmarks that they tend to get involved. So it's very difficult to combat because in and of itself it's not an illegal practice. However, we did contact a number of broker-dealers to put them on notice. And we contacted clearing firms, broker-dealers, discount brokerage firms, online firms. And we did that telephonically for two reasons. One, we felt that email would be ignored and that sending something via mail would not be expeditious. So we decided to call, and also so that we wouldn't be ignored. We wanted someone to hear our voice, that we are real people, we represent a real business. So, and we didn't just call somebody at the company, we called their compliance offices. And we asked them to evaluate all of their trades of RXMD and to figure out who within their firms are trading our shares naked with the inability to deliver. And the response we got was rather mixed. Most compliance offices were quick to assure us that they weren't involved, that they had no naked short positions in their firm. However, just by answering the phone call, we know that they couldn't possibly know that for sure. Nobody knows off the top of their head what we were trading at. But we know that they took us very seriously. And that was the other part. And that's the part we found encouraging, is that every compliance officer we spoke to took the issue very seriously, and they went and they looked at their trading patterns and made whatever directives that they needed to make in order to eliminate our failure to deliver notice on OTC markets. And as you know, we had that notice up on our website or on OTC markets. We had a little disclaimer of a regulation SHO problem, and we believe that contacting all these firms and letting them know that this is an issue corrected that. And then also reaching out to FINRA to see what we can do, and knowing that we can reach out to the the Division of Market Regulation and make a complaint if we absolutely needed to. So that was beneficial, and we felt that having those conversations were beneficial and led to the right results.
Okay, I've got a two-part question for you here. What is the share count status with Chicago Venture Partners, and how many shares does the company estimate is remaining to be issued? Go ahead and answer that, and I'll give you the follow-up when you're done.
So we issued a total of just over 10 million shares for this second tranche. I think we issued about 19 million shares for the first tranche. As you know, we took down those funds when we were on pink sheets, and Chicago Venture Partners took a tremendous amount of risk on us. We went to a number of investor conferences, spoke with a number of broker-dealers, spoke with a number of banks about other avenues of financing, and each one had the same issue, which is that we were not fully SEC reporting, and the timeline for getting SEC reporting was too long at that point because we anticipate we need 3 years of audited financials. At that point, we didn't have any. So Chicago Venture Partners had to hold for 12 months, and they took a tremendous amount of risk on us. They were there for us at the right time because without them, we couldn't execute on the touch point location, and we wouldn't be able to execute on the build-out and expansion of that location. So we are grateful. That being said, we don't expect to be using this facility in this way in the future. I think going forward, we have 10 million shares that we've issued on the second tranche. We have about 4 million that remains to be issued. We have about $200,000 left on the note, and so that equates to about 4 million shares, give or take, to be issued. And then that note is done, and then we don't have to issue them any more shares.
Well, that kind of answers that follow-up question. Are you expecting to draw down on any additional funds from this facility? I think you just answered that.
Not at this time, and if we do work with Chicago Venture Partners again, we are grateful for them taking the risk when not many people would, and very many, if they did want to, were at much more expensive than this. We believe that if we do need to work with them again, that we can renegotiate a new facility, that we can do terms that are more beneficial to our shareholders. We did not anticipate trading at where we were trading at. So now that we're at anywhere between 10 and 12 cents, or 8 and 12 cents, we can renegotiate this facility to be more reflective of where we are now.
Very good. What are the company's plans for growth in 2018, and are there other acquisitions or locations being discussed?
So we've long held a position that while growing organically is phenomenal, and we've been doing a great job of just getting more and more patients through our one location, we know we need to grow through acquisition. We know that to expand this company and its model out into the rest of Florida and through the rest of the United States, that we need to acquire more pharmacies, we need to acquire more healthcare institutions, because we are experts in those fields. So we are anticipating more acquisitions. We hope to execute on another one this year. And we want to have another location in the I-4 corridor, so we're specifically targeting that area. But we can go anywhere in the United States and be effective. We're looking for population-dense locations where our model is beneficial, and we're looking for pharmacies that offer intrinsic or strategic value, where they can add to our diversity of talent or whether they can add to our service capabilities, sterile compounding, non-sterile compounding, specialty, long-term care, whatever it is that they can add to our abilities. That's what we're looking for. And so we have a number of acquisition targets that we've identified. We always have several that we have to evaluate for valuation, for feasibility, for execution, whether they can be auditable and all of that. But we do expect to have more acquisitions in 2018, especially in 2019.
All right, let's get to the next question now. What are the given the current growth agenda, what are the company's future financing plans?
So in order to grow through acquisition and expansion of locations, we know that we will need to raise more capital. The cash flow from operations is great, but it only allows us to grow each location individually, just adding more patients, just being able to invest in more people and more equipment in each individual location. So if we want new locations and if we want to have new healthcare practices under the Progressive Care name, we know we're going to have to raise more money. How that happens is uncertain. It can be through bonds, it can be through notes, convertible, it can be through bank loans, it can be through straight equity. We don't know yet how that will shape out. Some of that depends on the ability of the company to file an S-1 and go fully reporting with the SEC. So we can't guarantee at any time or confirm at this time how those financing options will shake out. As we progress through the rest of the year, and as our acquisition picture becomes clearer, we will definitely be reporting to our shareholders and our investors what it will take to move forward and what financing options are on the table. We know that they want to have, all of our shareholders want to have an ability to voice their opinion on how we execute on these financing options, and so we intend to make it as transparent a process as possible.
If a reverse split or increase in authorized shares is necessary, how would that process work for the shareholders?
So this is a really great question. I think there's a lot of confusion out there about how it works. First, the preferred shares that we have under our structure right now, the super voting preferred, have no effect on the vote to do a reverse split or an increase in authorized shares. All of that is a one-to-one vote by the shareholders of record at a given date. And so the process would be to put out a notice that a shareholder meeting is going to take place, that what the agenda for that meeting, what the voting items of that meeting are, and then allow the shareholders to either submit proxies or attend the meeting in person and vote on those measures as they see fit. So each shareholder, regardless of super voting or not, each individual shareholder of common shares has an equal footing in that decision. So if you have 10 million shares, that's your vote. The super voting preferred doesn't matter in this. So that's how it would take place. We would provide ample notice of a meeting and provide ample distribution of proxy notices so that way we can reach as many shareholders as possible and make sure everybody has an opportunity to vote and be a part of the process to guide our future in that way.
All right. When does the company expect to be fully reporting with the SEC?
So as of today, we expect in our most conservative of estimates that if the SEC wishes to have us report 3 years of audited financials, PCAOB SEC audited financials, that we would be able to accomplish that no later than March 31st, 2019. We have already audited 2015 balance sheets. We have already had 2016 and 2017 audited. We are in the process now of identifying an SEC-capable PCAOB firm to begin the process so it's as quick as possible. We will also be finding out in the coming months what the SEC actually will require, whether it's going back further than 15 or whether we need to include 15 in any financial statements and how long that will take. Once we have an answer from the SEC, we will know more about an exact timing and date of when we will become fully SEC reporting. But we expect that in all reasonable measures that we would be delivering 3 years of audited financials, no more than four if we include 2015, and that we will be able to execute on that by the 10K reporting deadline of March 31st, 2019.
All right. Well, that was all the questions that we had earlier, but we did get a question that just came in, and I appreciate the shareholders for doing that and sending some questions in during this call. And it goes back to Touchpoint RX. So on the fly here, Sheetal, with the consolidation of Touchpoint RX in June, what do you expect the consolidated revenue to be, and what do you expect in terms of growth rate?
So we expect to have growth in Touchpoint. Right now, Touchpoint does about $100,000 a month. We are currently in the transition phase of learning their systems, learning their operations, meeting with their current customers and the doctors that they service. But we expect once we become the full owners of the company that we will be able to grow that company anywhere between 30 and 50%. So if we expect $100,000 a month through the end of the year, we should expect to have about $900,000 or more in realizable revenues from Touchpoint this year. So that'll add to our bottom line, or that'll add to our top line in the consolidated statements. We are on pace. We expect to do about $22 million just with Farmco by itself this year. So if we add Touchpoint, we should be at about $22.5 to $23 million.
Excellent. Well, let me kick it back to you for some closing thoughts, Sheetal.
So often when I do my closing remarks, I am very reflective and very appreciative of my team. I do that because I believe that history often provides us with context and perspective. And I feel that's important every day when we're looking at the business to know where we come from and why we're here and what we've accomplished so that every day we remain humble and every day we remain hungry. But today, I want to do something a little different. I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about why we're here, what our mission is, and even me, even today, I require reminding about why we do what we do. And so as we move forward, why are we growing Farmco? Why are we growing Progressive Care? Why should people view us as equal parts mission and opportunity? And it is because, precisely because we are a health services company, because we believe we are needed in the health services spectrum. We know that when a patient goes to the hospital, when they go to the doctor, when they go to the urgent care or the psychiatrist or the physical therapist or even the home care agency, there are gaps. There are problems in between visits with healthcare practitioners where patients lose sight of their medication regimen, lose sight of their health, lose sight of their well-being. And so we are attempting to fill all of those gaps. We are attempting to make sure no patient gets ignored, no patient gets disregarded, no patient's medication is too confusing to take, and that they can stay well by making sure they have an open line of communication with the pharmacy. That is why we are here. That is why we are growing. We are looking to Touchpoint as just the first step in our expansion. We want to go as far as our will take us. If we start in South Florida, we're doing $20 million between two counties. We know that if we expand through the rest of Florida, the sky is the limit of what we can reach. We know we can reach platforms that other people wouldn't think of, and we know we can lead the thought on how healthcare should be. We know we are changing the way healthcare is practiced, and we know that because doctors are coming to us. They're asking us how they should dispense meds. They're asking us how they should treat patients. They're asking us for help, and they're asking Progressive Care. And we provide the answers. We provide the leadership. We provide the innovation. We're developing telepharmacy, not because we think the technology is interesting or cool, while it is both of those things, but it is effective. It will help patients across the spectrum understand their medications. It will help doctors be able to explain their medications to their patients. It will help everyone be able to have access to the pharmacy in a manner that is convenient to them. We will grow through acquisitions. We will grow through healthcare services, through pharmacies, and we will become a leader in the healthcare space. And that's why we're doing this, and that's where we come from. I understand pessimism. I understand skepticism. But to anybody that doesn't believe, you either need to get on board or you need to get out of our way, because bigger things have tried to take down progressive care, and they have failed. Nothing will stop us from becoming what we are destined to be. Nothing will stop us from becoming fully SEC reporting. Nothing will stop us from uplisting to a higher tier exchange. These are inevitabilities. They are not ifs, they are whens. And so for anybody looking for a reason, you're investing in a company that matters. You're investing in a company that has a purpose. You're investing in a company that believes in itself and does good work in the community and in the state and in the sphere and in the industry. And you're investing for a financial opportunity because we're growing, and nothing is going to stop that growth. So today is the beginning, and it's always been the beginning since we started this. We are on the cusp of more, and at 10 cents, it doesn't matter what the share price is today. The only thing that matters is that it won't be there for very much longer, and we will be growing that as we progress into the future. So look to us, look to our story, and find a reason to believe. Find a reason to look at our company with clear eyes, with fresh eyes, and know that you're investing something that actually does good work. And we think we'll make you guys proud. Any investor that puts their money behind us, we try to deliver as much as we can, and your futures are valuable to us, and they're sacred to us, and we take that very seriously. And there is a future, and we are moving towards it. So with that, I want to thank all of you for investing. I want to thank all of you for listening. And I want to thank every one of you that believes, because it matters so much to us. Thank you for everything you guys do.
Excellent. Well, once again, I do want to say, keep sending in those questions. You've got my email address, ssmith@smallcapvoice.com. Sheetal, I want to thank you for your time today. And like you said, we want to thank all the shareholders for listening. This concludes the RXMD May 15th, 2018 shareholder conference call. Have a great evening.